Today on Maine Calling, Catholicism in Maine. Maine's Catholic churches are some of the tallest and most beautiful buildings in Maine, anchoring its largest cities. Think of the Basilica in Lewiston or the Cathedral in Portland. These were built during the times when many Catholic immigrants had moved to Maine to work in the mills, Irish and French Canadian. What does the Catholic Church look like in Maine today? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with the Vicar General of Maine and a professor at St. Joseph's College about how Catholicism in Maine has changed and continues to change. What's been the impact of the first American Pope? We'll also learn about a national Catholic pilgrimage making a stop in Maine this week. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Catholicism is one of the largest organized religions in Maine. Today, we're going to discuss the impact of the American Pope on Catholics in the state, as well as trends in membership, and a national Catholic pilgrimage that is making a stop in Maine. Joining us for the hour are the very Reverend Kyle Dustu, who is Vicar General of the Catholic Diocese of Maine, and also with us, Dr. Jake Tebow, who is professor of philosophy at St. Joseph's College of Maine, head of the department. We invite you to join the conversation. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. I have to start by asking you, Kyle, what is a vicar general? I'd never heard the term before.
I'm still trying to figure it out myself. No, thank you for having me. This is great. Just in short, the vicar general is the prime assistant to the bishop in the governance of the whole diocese. So instead of working in just one particular area or in one particular parish, like most priests, I'm with the bishop and I help him with everything. Sometimes that involves more of the financial things. Sometimes it involves priest assignments. Sometimes it involves big picture vision things. And then sometimes it means I'm the one that goes to get donuts for the morning meeting.
Okay. And is it proper to refer to you as Father Dustu? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let me ask you this. I understand that you've had a really, even though I'm looking at you here on my Zoom camera and I see that you are a young man, you've had great experience in different parts of Maine already, serving in Arista County and at the University of Maine. Two really fascinating assignments, it seems.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my first assignment as a priest, I was ordained in 2014. I was assigned to the Parish of the Precious Blood, which is in Caribou. Now, it's not just Caribou, it's a cluster of churches. So I was in, let me see if I can get them all. Caribou, Presque Isle, Mars Hill, Stockholm, North Caribou, Limestone, Fort Fairfield, Washburn, Portage, and Ashland. I got them all. That was my first assignment. I was there for 2 years. It was just the most wonderful experience of my life. I had never been north of Houlton before, so I had no idea what I was going to be experiencing up in the county, but it was just tremendous. So I spent a lot of time in the car, a lot of time driving between our 10 churches with a few of the other priests who were assigned there, and I got to meet just some of the best people on God's green earth up in northern Maine. The faith is very strong up there. It has very deep roots. And I was just immediately welcomed as a member of everybody's family. Just absolutely incredible. You know, this, I was 26 years old at the time and just fell in love with Northern Maine.
All right. And then you went to serve at the University of Maine Orno, but I want to also bring in Professor Thibault into the conversation. And one thing that you both have in common, because you were at UMaine and you're at St. Joseph's College, Jake, is that you work with young people. And I'm wondering, I have read in national publications that we're seeing a surge of converts to Catholicism right now around the country, especially young people. Is that something that you both are seeing? And I'll start first with you, Professor Thibault.
Yeah, thank you again for having us on. St. Joseph's College is the only Catholic college in Maine, and we recruit mostly locally from Maine. So we have a very Maine experience. And I'm not sure if the viewers are aware, but Maine is one of the least religious states in the country, and one of the least, it's the most un-Catholic state in New England. So as the trend of Catholicism around the country is going up, and I think it is in Maine as well, but we do have certain challenges in Maine that we don't have in other places. At the St. Joseph's College, we have a lot more interest. When I came to St. Joseph's 5 years ago, there was a lot of reservation when it came to religion. And I think nowadays there's a little bit more openness. There's skepticism against the system, but there's openness to faith and religion in general.
Father Kyle, would you agree?
Yeah, I would, definitely. So when I got to the University of Maine, that was in 2019. I did 3 years at the cathedral in Portland. When I got to the University of Maine in 2019, there was already pre-pandemic a great interest in matters of faith among sort of the majors you would not necessarily expect. The mechanical engineers, the biomedical engineers, our forestry majors, like the sciences, the hard sciences. And, you know, many of them had come from a background where they had no faith whatsoever. They just were not raised in it. And they were kind of, you know, soaking in the world or the age of the new atheism, you know, which is a very materialistic, reductionist view of reality. And it, you know, despite all of their science and data and research, they were just struggling with you know, the logic and the experience that they were having, that there is something more. And so it's really been a steady parade of very serious science majors who have led and paved the way for what is really a boom among our young people in thinking about Catholicism and converting.
It's so interesting, Father Kyle, because I thought what you're going to say was it's the popularity of Pope Leo. But if you say before 2019, this would not be the story. Though the Pope is quite popular, isn't he?
He is, yes. And I mean, the Pope definitely has sparked some interest, but I think for most young people, they're gonna need something deeper than just the Pope in order to, you know, in a sense, abandon their former way of life and way of looking at the world and becoming Catholic. Although I think that having an American Pope is a good gateway for them to maybe think about things that they haven't thought about before, to be able to turn on, you know, YouTube and to see the Holy Father with a Chicago accent talking in your native language it's just jarring. It's incredible. No one ever thought we would see that. And so, while I don't think he himself has been the cause of this wave of conversion, it predates him. I do think that he is helping to keep the spigot on, so to speak.
Yeah, just recently I saw on my Instagram feed the Pope dancing with Bad Bunny. Jake, Professor Thibault, is that maybe is social media, is YouTube maybe an attractive front door for young people to think about the Catholic Church in a different way than their parents or grandparents?
Oh, I think definitely it is. When I talk to most young people who are interested in the faith and they come to me, it's often through social media that kind of opened the door for them to even start asking those questions. And I think the thing that's really helped is this long form media. Catholicism, it's easy to shoot down Christianity or Catholicism with one line zingers. But if we have a 2-hour conversation about it, it seems like the Catholics have really thought things through. We really have been debating a lot of these important issues for the last 2,000 years, and we've come up with some pretty good ways of understanding things. It's certainly not... a person can be a non-believer, but you can't think that the Catholic Church hasn't thought through all of these issues. And I think the students listening to this, these long-form media apologetics, reasons for the faith, it certainly draws them in, I think.
All right. Well, on the line with us now is Sarah. We're doing this program today as opposed to another day of the year because there is a National Catholic Pilgrimage underway, and that pilgrimage is in Maine right now, in Portland, in fact. And Sarah, you're with the organization that helped put this on. Tell us about it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So I grew up in Maine, just north of Portland in Topsom, and where the Lord took my life after I worked for the diocese for a while was to a company called the National Eucharistic Congress. And we're the ones putting on the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage, and we're in Portland today. I'm literally riding in the van as I call in behind the walking procession going down Cumberland Avenue.
So if I'm in Portland right now and I look out the window, what do I see?
Yeah, so we have a police escort in the front and in the back. We've got a couple of our clergy, the priests here that work with Father Kyle that are here in downtown Portland, as well as Bishop Ruggieri. And they're processing with the Eucharist in a gold display case called a monstrance, which means to show. And then we've got a number of faithful Catholics from here in Maine and actually from all over who have come to profess and to witness to their faith. We have some singing going on. We have some prayers going on, and really just wanting to bring the hope of Jesus to the streets of Portland.
So for those who are not raised Catholic, what is the Eucharist?
Yeah, so we believe as Catholics that Jesus is present in the Eucharist. It's a belief that we hold in the Catholic Church that's essential to our belief. And this tradition of Eucharistic processions actually dates all the way back to the 13th century. It's a public witness and a profession of our faith that Jesus, the Son of God, is present in the Eucharist. So a couple of years ago, the Catholic bishops here in the United States called for a Eucharistic revival. And this was a 3-year initiative that was meant to help us once again bring to the center of our faith this belief that Jesus, the Son of God, is present in the Eucharist. And so that's when really in America, this tradition of Eucharistic pilgrimages was resurfaced. It's happened in Europe for centuries, but really in America, we hadn't seen Eucharistic pilgrimages taking place very often until a couple of years ago.
All right. So you've already been to Kennebunk, right, in Brunswick and Portland today. But tell us about the national pilgrimage. Where did it start? Where will it end? And how long is it lasting?
Yeah, so we started all the way down in St. Augustine, Florida on Memorial Day weekend. This is the 3rd year that we've done this National Eucharistic Pilgrimage, and each year the routes have been different. So for this year, with it being the 250th anniversary of America, we thought it would be a good idea to lean into that. Our theme for this year's pilgrimage is One Nation Under God. And we've really been praying for our country, praying for healing, praying for unity, for God to renew what's hurting and broken in our nation, and also with gratitude for the great gift that our country is and how God's hand in his providence has been in that throughout the centuries. So the reason we chose to start in St. Augustine is because the first Catholic Mass was celebrated down in Florida all the way back in the 1500s. So there are many, many roots of Catholicism that predate 1776, the founding of our nation. So as we have been traveling this summer, we've been going up the Eastern Seaboard, started in St. Augustine, but we've been visiting places of historical significance in our country, but also spiritual significance in the history of our church in this country. So we made our way from St. Augustine up through Georgia. There are some Georgia martyrs that were killed for the faith back in the early days, again, before the country was actually founded. We went up to South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia. We made some stops in Williamsburg, and then through Washington, D.C., did a blessing at the Washington Monument in the heart of our nation's capital, and then Maryland, Delaware, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and now today, and these couple of days here in Maine. And then we'll be continuing on down through Boston. We have a procession on the Freedom Trail this upcoming Saturday, and then through Providence and ending in Philadelphia over 4th of July weekend.
Well, Sarah, thank you for taking the time to call in from the van. Sarah is with the National Catholic Pilgrimage that's going on right now. Thanks so much. You know, there's so much more I want to ask you all about how the church is changing, some of the history of the Catholic Church in Maine, but we do need to take a quick break. For those of you in the audience who'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're discussing Catholicism in Maine. Joining us, Father Kyle Dustu with the Catholic Diocese of Portland, and Dr. Jake Thibault is also with us. He is a professor at St. Joseph's College, a philosopher, and head of the department. We invite you to join the conversation. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Sonia, who is a professor at Colby College. Hi, Sonia. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Go ahead.
So I've been studying international priests in the United States, often coming to many different types of places, urban areas and rural areas of the United States. And about a third of Catholic priests, diocesan priests in the United States today, are international born. We often think that the Catholic population is declining, but what we mean by that is that the white Catholic population in the United States is declining. The Catholic population has stayed relatively percentage-wise the same since the 1960s because of an influx of Latina Catholics. So we have a lot of issues of race in the Catholic Church today. The church that I go to in Winslow, Maine is staffed by a priest from Nigeria. And this is a case in many different dioceses throughout the country, but especially in Maine. I'm studying Montana and North Dakota. And I saw on the Facebook site that somebody talked about settler colonialism in the Catholic Church. And some of these international priests are also stationed on Native reservations or at boarding schools in Native reservations throughout the United States. So it does this other kind of racial aspect of Catholicism in the United States today.
Sonia, thank you so much for calling in. And Father Kyle, I saw you nodding as Sonia was talking. Tell me what that has meant to you and to the church to see so many people who were born in other countries serving as pastors today.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And it's certainly not something that I thought I would see when I was a young boy, because all of the priests of the diocese at that point were all from Maine, born and raised. The only racial distinction between us were some were Irish and some were French. But in today's day and age, there are parts of the world where the Catholic Church is just exploding in parts of India and Africa and elsewhere. And they have lots of vocations to the priesthood. And these places, which were, you know, former missions, are now turning out the missionaries. And in our diocese, about 60% of our active priests are actually international. They come from a variety of different countries, mostly from Africa and India. And they come here at great personal sacrifice to themselves in order to serve the church that once helped to send missionaries to their lands. And they are a wonderful group of men who bring a tremendous amount of zeal and joy and perspective to us as we, you know, live out our Catholic life here. I think, you know, for Catholics, you know, the word Catholic means universal. You know, we are found in every corner of the world, in every culture, every country, every continent. But sometimes our local expression, we can get very sort of tunnel vision. We just kind of look at the way things have been right in front of us. When you have missionary priests that come from different parts of the world, they bring great perspective. So for instance, many of our priests coming from, you know, different parts of Africa have a completely different idea of what Sunday Mass looks like. It's an all-day event. People travel by foot for miles to come to Mass. They stay for a Mass that is 3 or 4 hours. They have a big community meal afterwards. It's quite different from, you know, the 45 minute one and done Mass that a lot of New Englanders are used to. But this has been a great way of sort of expanding our understanding of how things work in different parts of the world. And I think they've really, these wonderful missionary priests have done a great job of helping to build our communities and to form us for the next phase of our life at the Church in Maine.
Father Kyle, so much of what you said is so interesting to me, but the first 60% of the active priests in Maine today are from another country. We're born in
Correct.
Another country. And
Correct.
Also that we are viewed within the church as a place a missionary would come to. That is a big change, isn't it?
It is a big change. Now, Maine has always been a place of missionary priests. From the Diocese of Portland was founded in 1853, and it was missionary priests coming from Canada and from France and from Ireland who came to take care of this vast, you know, wooded, forested state with little outposts here and there. It was only after the sort of boom of immigration, European immigration, Canadian immigration, around the turn of the century, that we really started seeing, you know, our own homegrown priests. But that was actually a small part of our history. Our beginnings involve great missionary work coming from different parts of the world. And our reality today is that we've got missionary priests coming from different parts of the world. So everybody in Maine, you know, understands, I think, that, you know, we're not like a big metropolis. We're certainly not in the center of civilization. We are all the way up east. There's a lot of rural, sort of secluded areas in Maine, which meant that the work of the church has always been quite missionary here. So it makes sense that we continue to have missionary priests.
And is that in part also because the Catholic Church in the U.S. has had a hard time recruiting enough priests that were born here in the United States?
Yes. And part of that is because the church grew so quickly in so many different areas during that boom of European and Canadian immigration. We built up a lot very quickly to support the faith life of a massive influx of immigrants. So we've created quite the infrastructure, and this infrastructure requires priests to staff. And what we've found is that boom of immigration, which is still happening, not so much in Maine, it's happening in the southern part of the state with the Latino population, that boom is not necessarily producing the number of priests that we need any longer. And so we have to go back to foreign missionaries to help us out.
All right. And Professor Thibault, Jake, I want to follow up on this conversation about priests from other countries and look at the membership of the Catholic Church in the U.S. Many of the members of the church are also immigrants, correct?
Yes, one of my favorite events in the diocese is the Corpus Christi procession, which is the procession with the Eucharist that we do in June. And I often would go to the Corpus Christi procession in Portland. And after the 10:30 Mass, we would process from the cathedral to St. Dominic's Sacred Heart Parish, and you would get we'd leave chanting in Latin, and then with the Eucharist and the priest, and then the Vietnamese community would start singing, and they wear their Vietnamese traditional outfits, and then one of the African communities would start singing. And then another African community would sing in French. And then the Latino community would start singing, and they would have their own instruments. And then maybe the Polish community would start singing. And it would just keep going for about 2 hours. We would just be processing through the streets of Portland with all of these, with this beautiful arrangement of music and cultural expression. But we all processed as one church, right? That was, that to me, right? We always see these images of diversity and of inclusion, but it's really, you see it within the church where it's actually being lived out, that we are actually living out that vocation of diversity and inclusion. And it's one of my favorite events because I'm used to my own music, but hearing the Africans sing in their, you know, with all of their heart, or hearing the Latinos sing, it's just, it's not my culture, but it just stirs my heart, and it gives me so much joy to be all one body, all praising in our own languages, in our own ways, but the same Eucharistic Lord.
Sonia, thank you so much for calling. I'm going to go now to Zach, who's calling from New Hampshire. And Zach, thanks for calling in. I understand you are a recent college grad.
That's true. Yes, I graduated 1 year ago.
From?
From the University of Maine, right here in Orono. I studied mechanical engineering.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. And you are who Father Kyle was talking about earlier, how many young people who are studying the sciences and engineering are interested in or turning to the Catholic Church. Tell us your story. What got you interested?
Sure. So I'd been interested in religion only for a couple of years. It's only been a couple of years that I've been interested in the faith. Before that, I had thought that it was sort of an anachronistic practice just for older people and those who were not scientific. But as I started looking into it a little bit more, I was just amazed, one, on some of the superficial reasons, right, that there are actually intelligent people who believe the faith. But two, on a more profound level, I was just amazed at how compelling the arguments for the existence of God are, and how our scientific discoveries have really shown us that there is a need for an explanation of the Big Bang and evolution, all these other parts that we know from the created world, what is behind them, that we're not anti-scientific, but how does God work through the science, the natural science that he has created.
Zach, do you feel as though you're one of just a few young people or recent college grads thinking these things, or did you find that many of your peers were on the same kind of journey you were?
No, I think that this is something that is becoming more commonplace among young people. There is such a need, a universal human need for meaning, for longevity, something outside of yourself. And this is something that our culture now is so lacking, right? We have a world where, especially for young people, trends are not measured in years or decades, but are measured in weeks and days. Something can be in one day and then out a few days later. And so through all of that, through that instability, a constant need for, need to still be popular and with it, there's something very satisfying in a tradition that's existed for 2,000 years, something that is real in a tradition. 2,000 years mean the Catholic faith, but, of course, God as well, who is eternal, not bound by the limits of time the same way that we are, something that we can really put our trust in an ever-changing world that has so many, things to offer us, it seems, and then you try everything, it just seems empty. You still feel lacking. So I think there's a real understanding among young people that there is something missing, that maybe our parents and grandparents, you know, they didn't live completely in an ever-changing world the way that we do. And so now it's more clear than ever that we need to return to our roots, what humanity was created for.
Well, Zach, you've obviously thought very deeply about this. I want to ask you, I've read articles that say the Catholic Church is very appealing to young men, but not so much to young women. Is that your experience, Zach?
Well, I'll definitely say that the Catholic Church is appealing to young men. I don't think that it's unappealing to young women. I think the reason for this trend is because the attraction of Catholicism is especially alluring to young men. And I haven't found in my experience that young women are repelled by the idea of the Catholic faith. It really is more that the culture has moved so far away from what men yearn for, what young men yearn for, that it's just particularly desirable to young men. You know, the order of religion, the tradition, the beauty, the mission. Men are driven by mission, and I think the Catholic Church is of course, the perfect resting place for this, where it's not men can find the fulfillment of their desires, not in, you know, an animalistic sort of way or a materialistic way of just making a bunch of money and, you know, exploiting others, especially women, but rather they find their true end, which is sacrifice and love of others, laying down their life for the benefit of those around them. So I think that kind of messaging is very attractive to young men. And women, of course, also are, like I said, drawn to the Catholic faith. It's just more that the culture is so anti-young men in a lot of ways. There's so many areas where young men have just been forgotten that it's especially attractive to them.
Zach, thank you so much for calling in. I so appreciate your thoughts and your perspective today on Maine Calling. Zach, a recent college grad calling in. And I want to follow up on this thought just a little bit, and I'll go to you, Jake, Professor Thibault. I'm wondering if the reason there aren't more women turning to the Catholic Church is because the power structure of the Catholic Church is all male.
Well, thank you for giving me the hot issue. The female ordination.
I have a feeling you can take it.
I think I can take it. Yeah, I think part of it could be, you know, honestly, maybe there is some element of that. It could be. But I think it's because the secular world misunderstands what power looks like. And, you know, in the Catholic Church, leadership is sacrifice and it's service. You know, as a layman in the church, my question is always to pray to God and ask, how do you want me to serve? It's not about me getting to the top, right? In corporate America, we want to get to the top. We want to be the CEO. But in the Catholic Church, our leadership is, how do I serve? And when you look at it from the outside, it looks like the Pope is the CEO. It looks like the Pope is the head of the company. But that's just not our perspective of what leadership looks like or what vocation looks like. For us, it's back to washing of the feet. It's serving one another. And there's an openness to everyone within the Catholic Church to serve and to love the Lord. I suspect, you know, I think Zach is onto something with that young men are looking for what it means to be a man in the world today. And the church has a certain perspective, which is attractive, to serve your family, to sacrifice for your family, to have children, to serve your community. There's a certain traditional element that doesn't need a lot of adapting between decades ago and today. For young women, we do need a little bit of of an updating or adaptation? What does it look like to be a young woman in the world today? I don't know. That is changing, right? It is something which is changing a lot. It's not to be 1930s women necessarily, right? Women are in the workplace, and that is a good thing for some people who are called to that. And we need more role models of what faithful women leadership looks like within the church. And I think that's something that's still evolving, that we do have some wonderful young Catholic women and older Catholic women who are role models, but it's still kind of an evolving area within the church. I'm sure Father Kyle has a lot more interesting thing to say about it than I do.
I'm going to actually put Father Kyle on hold because I do have one of the pilgrims calling in and she has been on hold for a while. Mary, I'm going to turn to you. How did you get involved in the pilgrimage?
Hi, thanks for having me on this morning. It was a time in my life back in the fall where I had moved to a new town. I had a new job, a new apartment, just a lot of transition in my life, and really desired to grow closer to Jesus. And, you know, he is the one thing that is stable, even in the midst of a season of change or just not really being sure what God's will is for my life. Knowing that I could do at least this, that I could spend time with Jesus this summer, that I could serve him and be a witness to the profound impact that he's had on my life ever since I was a little girl. And just draw close to his heart and put myself under his gaze, you know, walking in his presence, traveling up the Eastern coast. There's nothing like it. And it's a reminder that, you know, God desires to be with us. He's never left us. Even when we feel alone, that's why he came, and that's why he remains among us in the sacrament of the Most Holy Eucharist. It's real and it's tangible, and it's a way to live life with him in the daily moments. So that's why I decided.
Well, Mary, thanks for taking time off from the pilgrimage to give us a call. We do need to go to another quick break, but we are going to follow up with you, Father Kyle. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're discussing Catholicism in Maine. My guest, Jake Thibault of St. Joseph's College, and Father Kyle with the Catholic Diocese of Portland. If you're quick, you can share your thoughts and questions. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. I have a feeling we're going to have both of you back because I'm looking at the clock and so many people have questions. But Father Kyle, I want to let you follow up on this question of why the Catholic Church seems to be so appealing to so many young men, but maybe not the same numbers of young women.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my experience being at the University of Maine is that there were just as many women participating in the activities at the Newman Center as there were men. I think the reason for it is a little bit different for each person, not just between the sexes, but for each person. Women have always been sort of the stronghold of the faith. And I just think, you know, we've seen a decline in the number of visible, practicing, convicted men, and we're seeing that turn around. And so it kind of looks maybe like there's more of an influx of men, but I don't think so. I think it's probably pretty even. Now the stats will, you know, say something different, you know, in each place. But I think just sort of anecdotally, when I look out at the pews, it's a half and half.
Okay. Let's see. We'll go to Torbert calling from York. Hi, Torbert. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and guest. I grew up Catholic, and I wonder still about the dichotomy between the worldly church and the spiritual church. The worldly church has no women at the top. I see nothing in the spiritual church going back to Jesus to say that women should be excluded from representing the spiritual power, which is that transubstantiation. It's a patriarchal problem, and it's a worldly problem. It's not a spiritual problem. Women are just as capable of any spiritual attainment as any man anywhere. And the Catholic Church will never, ever become the fulfilled manifestation of the love of Christ and God for humanity until women can hold any position in the church, including Pope.
Torbert, thanks for your call. Father Kyle.
Well, I love your passion. I think it's great. I would just say that, as Catholics, we don't believe that there is a dichotomy between the worldly church and the spiritual church. There's one body in Christ. Now, St. Paul in his letters says that every member of the body of Christ is different. Each participates in his own way or her own way. And when you look at it through the lens of just like brute power or authority, yeah, it certainly looks like it's uneven, right? All the men at the top and all the women at the bottom. You could use this, though, with any other schematic, any other schema. And you can say there's more older people who hold authority versus younger people. You can look at it as there's more people from this part of the world than that part of the world. You're always going to find reasons to identify inequality, because that's just part of, the way the world works. What I would say, though, is that from my experience, and I've served in many, 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 many different churches throughout the state of Maine, this experience of, the priests at the top calling all the shots, holding all the authority, it's just practically not true. Our parishes, yes, are governed with a pastor who is a male, but they move and operate under the power and influence of both men and women. In the diocese, for example, in the chancery building that I'm in right now, many of the offices here, including some of the very high offices, are held by women. And they have just as much of an influence on policy in our conversations with the bishop as sometimes I do. And so there's a distinction between power and authority. And I think when you look at like power and the life of the church, This is something that is exercised pretty well by many women. You go to any church on the planet and ask who the most powerful person is in the church, and they'll probably tell you it's the sacristan who sets up for Mass in the morning. There's probably an 80% chance that's a woman, and she's the one who gets things done. Many ways calls the shots. It's a little tongue in cheek, and I understand what Norbert is saying. It's just, we look at this through a different lens than just the lens of equality that much of the world looks through.
Jane sends an email. She says, she's wondering if you've noticed an increase in interest in Christian mysticism. I've noticed a lot of young people, especially women, taking an interest in medieval female mystics like Julian of Norwich, Hildegard von Bingen, etc. Their emphasis on union with the divine is compelling. Professor Thibault, you want to take that one?
That's a good question. I think there is. I'm not sure if it's specifically mysticism, but there is a strong interest in perhaps medieval theology again. Metaphysics is such a dangerous term these days. The philosopher Mary Harrington talked about tomophobia, that there's a fear of Thomas Aquinas within academia. But there is, because Thomas Aquinas and the mystics, they talked about a certain metaphysical reality. Maybe that goes a bit too far afield, but there's a certain metaphysical reality that's appealing to people. What is something, right? Even if we think a lot of the big secular questions that we have today, what is a man? What is a woman? What does it mean to be a human being? Do we have free will? All of these questions, the medieval philosophers and the mystics, they address these issues in such beautiful and interesting ways. And people like Thomas Aquinas did it in a very systematic way. And if you contrast that to the postmodern philosophers, which are very nihilistic, there's something appealing to it. I was just reading some Philip Mainlander, a German pessimist, who just says that the whole world is dying and the whole of existence is a will to die. I think that people are looking for something different than that. I think people are looking for some type of positive reality. And I think that the medievals do a great job at that.
We'll go to Reed, who's calling from Dover Foxcroft. Hi, Reed. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having these speakers on. I'm really excited to hear what they have to say, and I really admire a lot of their passion and convictions. As someone who grew up in a really theologically structured environment in the Catholic Church, and then who later came out as queer in my adult life, a lot of the rejection that I received from the church resulted in me being driven out. And so I would love to know what you guys do in the diocese and what you do in the area to welcome queer and trans people into the Catholic Church, because they have a place and they belong. They're all God's children. So I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on that, and what you see as a place for queer and trans children of God. Thank you.
Father Kyle.
Yes, thank you for that. That's a wonderful question. And I'm sorry for any exclusion or pain that you've experienced, you know, in the life of the church. I would say that it's the gospel is absolutely inclusive. The church is open to all people, saints and sinners alike. And we are all a little bit of both, although we're all trying to move more towards one than the other. And I think that's probably sometimes where the difficulties come in. As we're moving towards holiness, you know, the church has a very rigorous moral theology, which is rooted in natural law theory, that you know, that tells us and teaches us that there's a certain way to live, and there are some things that are precluded by that, and it makes us quite unpopular. For whatever reason, we've chosen to focus a lot on the issue of homosexuality and other sexual things. And I think that's just because our modern world is so obsessed with sex and has been for the last several decades. But I think where we do a disservice to everyone is to just say, you know, come as you are, stay as you are. The idea is conversion. All of us need a deeper conversion. And that means something. It means a radical different way of life. Conversion comes from the Latin convertere, which means to turn around, to go down a new path. And, you know, sometimes the church, through her preaching, you know, has not always said this gently and carefully. Sometimes it comes across as very exclusivist and condemnatory. But the call to conversion is for all people. And there's a certain way of life that we've received from Jesus that we invite all people to live. And that does mean, you know, excluding certain lifestyles, certain ways of being, but that doesn't mean that you are any less a member of the church. As I said, everybody in the pew is a saint in the making, but a sinner in the present. And we're all in this together, and we all need to be moving towards that conversion. But there is room for all, always.
Father Kyle, is what you're saying is there's room for people who identify as queer in the church, but they will be encouraged to convert and not be who they are?
No, they're encouraged to conform their life to Christ. That's conversion. And there are things in our lives that we must let go of as we turn to Christ. You know, a man who maybe is on his third or fourth wife, you know, we believe that marriage is once for all. He's going to be called to convert, just in the way that somebody who is maybe living with somebody outside of marriage is going to be called to convert. And it has nothing to do with that any of these people are evil or they need to go through conversion therapy or whatever. That's not what it is. It's just that the Lord has given us a very robust way to follow him. And this means we all have to start taking steps towards this. And as Catholics, we believe that marriage is a sacrament and it's reserved for one man and one woman. And where, you know, the church is not going to change her teachings on that. And so her people are called to, you know, live their life in conformity with that. If you have a if you have a gay or queer Catholic, they're not expected to deny their proclivities or their orientation. They're just expected to live in accord with the teachings of the church, like we all are.
That's going to be our last question for the hour. We're out of time. Thank you both for joining us today. Father Kyle Doustu is Vicar General at the Catholic Diocese of Maine, and Dr. Jake Thibault is a professor at St. Joseph's College in Maine. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, pedestrian safety. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.